podcast from the National University of Singapore NUS FinTech Lab. So today we have a very exciting topic to discuss. It's in the news almost every day. There's a lot of attention from both, you know, the government, you know, the industry, also academics. It's about scams, especially SMS scams and phishing scams. That's, you know, rampant these days, not just in Singapore but around the world, and you know, various different ways in which we can tackle this problem. So, for instance, like just a month ago, the Monetary Authority of Singapore and the IMDA, Infocom Media Development Authority, released the Shared Responsibility Framework that outlines some guidelines about how the responsibility, who's liable, like the consumer, the bank, or the telco, which party is liable when certain kinds of scams actually occur. That provides, you know, a lot more clarity, and hopefully that will try to reduce, that will, you know, eventually reduce, you know, the number of scams. So to talk about this, I have two very important guests with me today. So first, we have Professor Chang Yi-Qian.
Hello.
Professor Chang is Associate Professor in the Department of Computer Science at NUS Computing. He's the lead principal investigator for the National Cybersecurity R&D Laboratory, and he works on cybersecurity-related topics. And second, we have Dr. Wang Chiu-Hong from the Department of Information Systems and Analytics at NUS Computing. And her expertise is also on cybersecurity, but more on the policy aspects and the economics of cybersecurity. So, Yi-Qian, welcome. Could you give us a short introduction of what, you know,
thanks for your introduction. I think that is sufficient.
Okay. Yi-Qian is very shy. Okay. Chi-Hong, do you want to give us a short introduction?
Thank you very much for your introduction. My research focused on the security policy and the economics.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get started. How good is Apple's security review?
I think both are equivalent in terms of the design of the OS and the access control. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they segregate the apps.
Yeah.
But the only difference is that who can put in the App Store.
Yeah. No, so Apple controls.
Yes.
Like when you submit an application for your app, right?
Yeah.
Apple will go through code, right?
Yes.
How?
Oh, it's not manual go through.
It's not manual go-through.
Just
so
scan.
It cannot be manual. How effective is that? Can things pass through the cracks?
Yes, right? Of course, it still can be passed through,
right?
Yes. Yeah.
So it's not like sideloading just makes it easier for any app to go on.
Yes.
But if you're clever enough,
yeah,
you can actually put malicious code into the apps, like a legitimate app, and put it on the App Store.
Yes.
Right.
It's more traceable. If something goes wrong, that's easy to trace.
Right. It's easy to trace. Because you know the developer.
Burning.
Right? They're more liable for this. Like, you know, like things like banks, telcos, consumers, who will bear the phishing scam losses? I think that question will be to you, Chi-Hong. What steps can individuals take to secure their phones against malware attacks? What would you do? How do you protect yourself?
For me, I don't really silo and I do typically I do not install apps.
You use Android?
Yes.
I use iOS.
Apple.
But there's a background regarding the mobile platform market. Singapore is just a regional market, it's quite small. But the landscape is actually in the European countries and the US. They try to constrain the monopoly power of platforms like the Google apps and also the iOS. Mm-hmm. For example, Apple, they have white papers, very long white paper to state how much effort they have put for security and how important it is to actually to prohibit those official apps. Yeah, so you will see next year, around March, April, the European countries, they will have legislations. They disallow the Apple app stores. They actually enforce them to allow the third party apps. More open. They must. They cannot prohibit those
sideloaded. Next year?
Yeah, around March and April. Okay. And even the federal government here in the US, They don't have such legislation, but they will follow up. They also want to control the monopoly power of the Apple Store as well. Mm-hmm. And so you can see that both platforms, although they claim that the security is their priorities, mm-hmm. but for the healthy of the market and to encourage competitions, actually we will see that the third-party apps may not be prohibited in the larger markets.
So third-party apps will have more easier access.
Yes. And also some criticisms for these platforms is that they try to protect their power under the name of security. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so actually I have gone through this shared responsibility framework. I think it actually creates some vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities. Because actually the primary principle for perpetrators of cybersecurity, mm-hmm. they want to exploit vulnerability. Mm-hmm. But this framework actually imposed three key vulnerabilities. And actually, the first vulnerability is actually they do not address the blending of phishing and the malware tactics in modern attacks. So we notice that this framework is very smart. They try to constrain the scope of the liabilities. It states that currently the framework only covers the phishing and the scams. However, actually phishing and the malware, they are the blending tactics exploited by attackers. All right, so for example, the so-called the phishing, like the real-world attacks often couple phishing lures with malware payloads to compromise devices. So that's the first one. So they claim that they try to exclude the malware. Mm-hmm. But
so if you have an attack that's phishing plus malware?
Of course, now it's actually... They use the phishing to lure the installation, scan the QR code for malware.
Yeah, install it.
Yeah. So in that situation, do you think this should be covered by SRF or not?
Yeah,
and by having these boundaries created the opportunity, and actually they remind hackers, oh, we can actually exploit this, the boundaries, actually we can leverage. You will, and by this
they want to go into the gray area.
Yeah. So actually they always actually is a cat and mouse game. Mm-hmm. So that's the first vulnerability. Mm-hmm. The second one is actually, you can see if we check the duties of financial institutes and the duties of the telcos, you will see that the mobile devices and the weakest link is actually the mobile devices and the SMS, mm-hmm. right? So mobile devices and the insecure SMS protocols introduce the weakness. And most of the duties relies on they need to, the FI and also telcos, they need to notify the users. And the users need to a timely response to this notice to avoid any loss, mm-hmm. right? However, and the SMS, they like the encryption, right? And enabling interception of sensitive information. Another financial institute's responsibilities that is excluded from SRF is actually the security of their mobile apps. And this also requires collaborations with mobile platforms as their architecture constrains the action that can be taken by the other parties in the ecosystem. Actually, my last point, this introduced the last point of the vulnerabilities. The mobile platforms in this framework is actually excluded from this framework. Right. However, as architects of mobile ecosystems, the policies set by platforms like iOS and Android define the security possibilities, and their business models may not be always aligned with the development of a healthy and regional market balance and security and competition. And so to summarize, based on these three vulnerabilities, my point is that security is an evolving challenge, requires shared responsibility. We need a framework to clarify responsibility. However, the defined responsibility should not become the way of shifting responsibility. And this is critical for security as the mindset of the perpetrators is to always exploit the boundaries between networks, systems, organizations, and procedures, and personas. So the careful examination of the cost, benefit, and incentive among stakeholders is needed to shape this framework. Yeah, so that's my little points.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And very well prepared. Oh my God.
Maybe I say respond to what Qinhong had mentioned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that this is a very good first step. Okay? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about responsibility, not many people would think that, okay, the consumer are careless, you have to be responsible. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we have to provide a safe environment for the consumer. Okay? Then what is the boundary? How do we define it? Okay? So in this SRF, is very precise. Okay? He state very clearly something that is implementable. Because it's implementable, it has to be precise. It has to be precise, then the scope is limited. Okay? And in this case, he mentioned, like we mentioned, there are two entities involved, the financial institute and the telco. The telco part is quite clear, it's about the filtering of this SMS scanner identity, making sure the SMS scanner identity is authentic. Okay? And the financial institute then state very clearly is that you have to provide an opportunity for the consumer to inform the FI that something is wrong, you have to take it down. And also the FI have to be continuously inform the consumer the transaction that have been carried out. Yeah. And the third one is that to protect the most important, I call mother of all transactions. That means changing the authentication method to something else. So the financial institute is supposed to do this. And all this can be very easily checked and implement. Okay? Mm-hmm. But of course, then he covered many different cases that just now were mentioned that's not covered.
Anyway, so the authentication method, like I think OTP is a horrible thing. SMS OTP is a horrible approach.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because it's just a number and you can kind of hijack and like, yes, it's very easy to do it. Why aren't banks' apps actually implementing more secure methods? I know the answer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know the answer.
The alternative to SMS is OTP token.
Token.
Which
is too damn costly.
Costly.
Right?
And
people
OTP,
don't carry
yeah
their token devices, yes, they don't, right? They lose it, they, you know,
need
a problem.
Recharge
yeah
the
they
need a lot of batteries
yeah,
as time being.
Like
yes
the separate OTP device,
yes,
right?
And somehow there's one more thing where people did not see that is the OTP token is unable to display the transaction.
Yeah.
And that will lead to some vulnerability. So SMS, in fact, is better than OTP token in the
because
sense that
carry more information.
Information,
yeah,
you are about to do this
right
and so on.
Right.
And then we are talking about this maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago. Okay, there's two opposing. One is SMS and OTP token. But now we have something called soft token. That means that the mobile phone as a token.
Yeah.
Then this mobile phone can have the advantage of both.
Yeah, you have the phone authentication.
You can see what is the transaction
SMS
and so on,
yeah,
and then it's not SMS. Yeah.
But many banks are doing that right now.
Yes.
So
yes,
what's the problem?
Actually, it's actually well established
yes
practice, so not just the banks. If you look
yeah
at the, all
yeah,
those,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
yeah, chat, even
yes
for many verifications
yeah
by the big players.
I guess, this is my guess, is that there are still a group of user, consumer, kind of against using smartphone, or they don't have access to it.
So it's a financial inclusion issue?
I mean, the elder, senior, some of them is very against having a smartphone.
Enabling a server, again, this is really about access and what we mean by like fair access.
Yes.
Right? Would opening up these more insecure approaches,
yes,
like maintaining these more insecure
yes
approaches for a small population or a shrinking population, really worth the greater risk imposed on everybody else, the larger part of the population?
Ooh.
Right? You don't want to exclude,
yes, yes,
like the elderly, right?
Yeah.
That just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. But to me, I mean, this back to the question that we have to handle the minority concerns.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, we have
yeah
to.
Yeah,
yeah,
to, you have to do. Yeah, you have to be responsible
so
for everybody, not
yes
just easy,
yes,
easy
yeah
consumers. What do you think about the role of social media platforms and e-commerce websites and all these things? Where, you know, these are platforms that you can have like an Amazon Marketplace, like or Shopee, a carousel, where a lot of these scams, I guess it's not a scam, it's not financial scam, but it's still, you know, people put stuff online, sell something, and they, you know, take the money, don't give you the product, all all these things. They're kind of different from like the scams.
But a scam can be in this case, right? Yeah. Because it's all about phishing.
Mm-hmm.
The phishing can be conducted through WhatsApp, for mm-hmm. example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like WhatsApp, you ask you to click something.
Is phishing?
Yes.
It's been around forever.
Yes.
Ever since like the first emails.
I love you.
Right. It's been decades.
Yes.
You know, even since late 90s, right, when the birth of e-commerce, right, spam and phishing were I guess like just prevalent.
Mm.
Why have we not come up with a solution to this problem?
Because they will always target the weakness of human beings.
No, but the infrastructure, for example, the infrastructure, can you not detect phishing? Again, is it just because we didn't have very good AI technology, wasn't as far along in those days? Now, perhaps with new AI, is it possible to detect and kind of, or is it the philosophy of the internet where we don't really care about what's carried, that kind of maintains and creates this persistence on this loophole, right?
Yes.
But technically, like financial institutions, they would look at transactions and do fraud detection, right? Look at transactions, something, an outlier or something, not seeming kosher, right? And they say, we flag this and we just hold it, ask the consumer, hey, we detected this transaction, did you really do this? And everybody's gone through that process before. And if you didn't do it, you call the bank and you have to wait 20 minutes for the customer service to pick up the phone, but you get to them and then they'll look into it, right? Now, that's actually not done by a human, that's done by machines, right? It's flagged, again, the follow-up may be done by humans. Why can't that be done for like phishing scams? Like it's an email. The SMTP servers, email servers can actually filter. They don't have to, people don't have to read and look at every message, but can filter, can have very good detection algorithms, and create a different way of delivering. Because do you really care that if I send you an email now that you receive it immediately, or do you care? Would you prefer that there's some filtering going on, make sure that the email sent to you is actually authentic, right? Is legitimate, and it comes like 5 seconds later because it has to go through like an AI detection, fraud detection, filtering algorithm.
So phishing. Phishing, if people interact as a social, phishing always occur. I mean, even in the Stone Age, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now, if you want to detect it, of course, internet is also like social interactions. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of difficult in that sense. As of just now, as an example, you talk about email phishing. Now you say, maybe we have technology can block all this. But phishing, there's one type, it's called targeted phishing. Where, for example, it is the case that my email account being compromised, then attacker using my email to send to you to fish for information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that a lot of just now the method you mentioned may not able to detect in that sense, right? But on the other hand, you also bring up a very interesting point. Now we have AI that who can automatically scan all our communications. Now, this opened up the opportunity to use AI to scan through the information and filter out potentially malicious intent messages.
Actually, I have some point about this.
Yeah.
Just now, you mentioned that the technology development and also the internet, we should have the capabilities to filter out, to detect those phishing, but it is not true. And the reason is because the pathetic dot series actually address the constraint of human behavior from four aspects. One is the market mechanism, the economics. Another is the architecture. The fourth is a social norm. So firstly, I would like to say that the architecture point of views, we are not so capable as we thought. The reason is because you see we are in a digital economy, digital age. However, the interconnections expand the attack surface. And also because the interconnections and also the technology in advancement, they always try to deconstruct the established boundaries that has been configured for our previous security control. So all the security control was based on the boundaries. However, technology and innovation, they need to break the boundaries. So that's provide the holes, the weakness, that this architecture cannot be addressed. That's the first part. Secondly, just now you mentioned about the filtering. Right, however, filtering actually, we may not have sufficient incentive for filtering. So for example, for the telcos, we think they have the capability to do the filtering. However, the filtering is actually, they spend a lot of efforts, but these efforts, the benefit is cannot be fully internalized by telcos. That means the other parties, they can enjoy the benefit, but they don't need to pay the telcos. So that's the externalities. Further, these filterings, either by the platforms or by the telcos, they may result in more liabilities. So for example, filtering is not perfect. If they actually they false positive, then they will increase the complaints from consumers. Sometimes they will actually incur the lawsuit just because of they wrongly filtered or something. This is what we relate to other topics. So for example, the network neutrality. Network neutrality actually it is to against filtering. Yeah, so the incentive also cannot provide, cannot actually motivate the telcos to and platform to do filtering. Third, is actually in the communities of NOR, they ask for help. So I in the past I attended the Interpol's. They actually is a communities connect many security and policemen from the Asian countries, and they talk about the major challenge they face in their daily work. It is these enforcement agents. They say they talk about how challenging they are facing. They need to actually catch up, understand the technology advancement. That's the challenge they are facing. Last point for social norms. Right, so for security, like safety, we can ask our parents. Parents will educate their kids. Grandparents will say that, okay, be care about. So that's four forces, actually. These, the adults cannot educate young people. And young people, they need to help seniors.
So well, it's the other way around.
Yeah, resulting in such a situation.
Yes. So I really like the way you talk about kind of how do we change kind of behaviors or kind of societal behaviors through, you know, you have architecture, you have you have market forces, and you have regulations, and then you have norms, right? But if we just look at, for instance, like again, you mentioned the limitations of architecture. Mm-hmm. There's many different challenges. Again, I think there can be some efforts there as well to kind of complement these other efforts. But if we just look at markets and regulation and laws, for example, you mentioned that telcos, for instance, don't have the incentive.
Not sufficient
incentive to be actually participating in this filtering, because they don't gain enough. There's a lot of costs involved. They don't gain the benefits, reap the benefits of their efforts because of the externalities. And so, you know, but from a policymaker perspective, well, when you think about the total welfare, and because of these kind of incentive issues, you know, the telcos are not putting in the investment to do this because it's not in their best interest. Isn't it the policymaker's kind of role to actually step in and do something, create regulation, create kind of, you know, requirements such that, you know, the social benefits are actually achieved?
I would like to say governments, they are the driving forces for security policies because they care about the welfare of every party in the society. But to address incentive is quite difficult. I can give you another example. It's about the progress of cybersecurity information sharing. We will see actually the U.S. government, not just mention Singapore government, some Singapore government and also the U.S. government, they have put a lot of efforts. They enforced, they launched the acts, they enforced the programs. The purpose is just to promote the security information sharing, for example, in the healthcare sectors, in the financial sectors. However, so far, if you check, there's no so-called best practice of security information sharing. The main reason is because the incentive is very weak, and it's very difficult to be addressed just by some policies.
Okay. No, I don't know. I may be very naive, but I thought incentive was kind of a simple problem. Not a simple problem, but it's really, you know, if you don't have the incentive to do something, just create the incentive. Tax breaks, tax subsidies, or something. that actually, you know, like makes the status quo possible. And I'm very naive.
But sometimes the policy is a two-sided source, right? Important. On one side, actually, I can tax you, I can penalize you, but on the other side, we need to push the progress of the societies. All these tax, these penalties actually will constrain the forces of innovation.
I think there's one point I want to make is that we should not stress too much on the responsibility of the telco. The telco, in some sense, is a postman.
It's a messenger.
It's a postman. Is not supposed to look into the letter, and he's not unable to open also, because right now a lot of things are encrypted. Yeah. So not able to see it, and they're not supposed to open it. So telco responsibility is to able to trace, he know who sent to who. Yeah. So in that case, a lot of scanning, they are not able to do it, and they're not supposed to do it. Yeah.
Yes.
So so I just have to bring out this point. Yeah. So it's the end applications, or the that means that in this case, it's a financial institute, and the consumer bear more responsibility in that sense.
The throughout all this discussion, what's really kind of implicit but interesting is that, you know, when something bad, the fraud happens, somebody loses money, right? We're bearing the responsibility, sharing the responsibility, we're allocating responsibility either to the consumer, either to the financial institution, perhaps sometimes to the telco. But the person that gains the most is the hacker, right?
No, it's not true. Yeah. Because when the responsibility is clearly laid down, then the affected party will make an effort to mitigate.
So there's a reduce the net.
Yes, the mitigation. So in fact, the SRF instead is a give, motivate or force the financial institute to clean up their application and their process.
Okay.
Yeah. So that will make hacking more difficult.
I don't know. I don't want you to make, you know, wild predictions. But how soon? Can like app, banks, right, clean up their apps and make them more secure? And is that how effective is that going to be? Like, say, in the short run, will it be in 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, if they do clean up their apps? Is it going to drastically reduce the number of steps?
It could. For example, like right now, we know that most bank already mentioned that the link, they will not send clickable link in the SMS. Right, they will not send. They will not send. So they make this as they will never send such a thing.
They've been doing that for a long time.
Yes.
Saying, you know, we will never send this kind of information, links on SMS.
Yes.
They don't. Right. But the hackers, right? The hackers are sending these SMS, spoofing them as legitimate banks with links.
Yes.
Consumers don't. They kind of know, they've been notified or instructed that banks will never send this, but they still click anyway. Even if banks don't send, unless they know that, once I get a link, this is like scam, they detect, you know, cognitively detect the scam, it's not going to be very effective.
Though this is effective in the education, because you have to give a very clear message to the consumer. For example, if you are an organization, you give them a very clear message, whatever email we send, the domain name must be our company domain names. So this is a very clear message to the employee. They will not able to. They will not click on it. You need to have a very clear instructions. So having this saying that the bank say that we will never send clickable link in the SMS. Send a very clear message. Very easy to educate. Let's say that you want to tell your grandfather, grandfather. What is the easier way to tell them, say, to distinguish a phishing SMS and not?
Yeah.
So as long as there's a URL there, it's a phishing.
Yeah.
Very clear.
No, but hackers are, this is a different thing, but hackers are very smart.
It's
always a cat and rat race. You fix something new occurs.
Yeah. So,
for instance, URLs, Yeah. You have to make sure that it's not a shortened URL. Yeah. It has to show the URL of the financial institution, of the legitimate. But you can have something like www.dbs.com.sg. hackerdomain.net or something. Yes. And it looks like, the front part looks like legitimate domain, the back part, because it's just like a hostname part, right?
Yes.
And so you can still try to fool people, even despite those rules and policy.
Yes, so we react to it. In the example you mentioned, so you may not notice that most browsers actually only display the domain name and not the part.
Yeah.
That is a reaction to this.
Yeah.
So this makes the attacks more difficult to carry out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always a cat and mouse games. We want to make their job very difficult.
The desktop browser does that. The mobile browser, I think, I don't know. They don't even display it. So it's very hidden. I wanted to kind of switch gears and jump to a different topic. We talked about how artificial intelligence technologies can do wonderful things. But artificial intelligence can do wonderful things for hackers too. Like generative AI, ChatGPT.
They generate spam email.
They can generate spam email that really sounds much more authentic, right? Coming from like a legitimate person.
Yeah.
And so the scams will become much more difficult to detect.
Yeah.
Right? And that, and the technology is available for everybody.
Mm.
Where do you see this going? I don't know, Ichin.
I believe we see emails, scam email produced by the generative AI.
Right? Are they more difficult to detect? Because they can, I'm presuming that they can. Like, you can put in a prompt, write me a scam email that kind of cannot be detected by most known detection algorithms.
I'm more worried about the cases where the targeted attacks, just now I mentioned, they somehow really get hold of my emails, the style that how I write an email, then forge an email, send to Junpyu. And then you go, this is my usual style, right? A very short, only one line, full stop, thing like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Actually, AI is posed the greatest threat for security as well. Because you see, for example, nowadays, the large language model is a black box. So that means what is what you put, for example, if we are doing prevention, what do we train the data? What we train the model, this can become the information that can be learned by hackers. So apply AI for filtering and to detect abnormal is actually a double-edged sword. Actually, just now you have a question that we haven't the answer. It just now you mentioned how competent is the financial institutes to secure their apps, right? How fast they can respond to it. Actually, for these questions, I have 2 points. Firstly, their business nature makes they can't respond very fast. Recently, I talked with a consultant from a security service provider, and she told me actually they can quickly, as a security service provider, they can quickly detect the malicious traffic, and they can quickly adjust their tactics to protect their client, for example, financial institutes. But the financial institutes, this allow them to implement their prompt reactions. The reason is because they will change their business rules. Right, and this will be risky to your clients. So that's the business nature. Actually cannot enable the quick response. And the other is actually related to the technology landscape of Singapore's financial institutes. Right, because in the past, IT is not the core business of banks. So for the cost consideration, and we normally will outsource all these technical services to other countries. And so this is good from a cost perspective, but it's actually this makes the technology department actually quite fragmented.
Mm-hmm.
So that means actually if, for example, some banks, local banks, if they got some scam problems or some incidents to investigate it, it's very difficult to coordinate.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is there much coordination going on? So what I'm thinking is, this is a societal problem. It's not a Singapore problem. It's not just a banking problem. It's a very broad, global problem.
Yeah.
And I think most people governments, people, institutions, organizations, legitimate organizations, everybody's aligned, consumers, everybody's aligned. They want a safer, more secure, like, you know, like infrastructure for doing financial transactions, whatever it may be, right? But are we kind of asking the financial institutions to solve the problems individually? Can there be more cooperation, more collective action in terms of trying to create something that's good for the whole world?
So, that's the role of the government. What happened? It is because the progress of technology. So actually, for all the banks, the legacy is that they start from financial institutes. Now they try to they're in the stage of to incorporate technologies. Mm-hmm. But if you look at other companies, those technology companies like, for example, the WeChat, Alibaba in China, and also now the X. The previous Twitter, right? They start from technology companies. Then they want to become incorporate the financial services. So they have the technology is driven their business. They are more actually ready, well prepared to tackle these challenges compared to the traditional financial institutes because of the legacy reason.
Okay. So we should, I guess, because you know we have a lot of these tech companies going into more business domains, like financial domains, like you know, X, for instance, or even Facebook using their WhatsApp. They're now doing like payments and things like that. So because of their deeper technological knowledge, they'll have
they are able to integrate their business
And rethink business and not be kind of bound by the legacy business models and stuff like that. So I think that's a very interesting point. So it will kind of change the landscape as we move forward because, you know, the growth of these tech companies will actually, you know, create a shift in the dynamics of that market.
The bank do share intelligent information.
Yeah.
There are some consortium that they share the cybersecurity intelligence system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Are you optimistic about, for example, mentioned earlier, like SRF will have kind of an, it won't solve all the problems, but it will have like a measurable impact on reducing right? So you're optimistic about that. What about you, Chiong? Are you optimistic that the SRF will actually have a measurable impact in terms of number of scams, amount of scammed amounts, I guess, amount of scams? Will it have a measurable, noticeable reduction?
I believe so,
okay.
Because that's how we survive and succeed. And if we look at the human histories, we always get problems, we solve problems, then we progress, advance.
Okay. So I guess you both are looking at a more positive outlook.
Yes.
I'm a very pessimistic person. I'm very skeptical.
Okay. Yes.
I think every you know, there's like Murphy's law. Everything that will go wrong, will go wrong. And we're kind of doomed. Is it like I think one of the things that I'm most uncomfortable about is really protecting the weak, right? Like we do have a vulnerable population, say, you know, like more elderly users who are not technologically savvy and whatnot. Is there more that we can do? Because education, again, as Chiong earlier you mentioned, you know, we always have this kind of top down: the old educate the younger, but now the younger have to educate the old. I never thought about it that way, but I think it's an interesting point. Education is kind of, to me, it's the last resort, right? Because you know, when you think about designing a system, right? If you create a better system without having to educate all the users, it's much cheaper. You don't have to design it once or redesign it once, and then it impacts everybody. Whereas education is only, you know, it's only as effective as how much everybody is educated, right? And it's very difficult to educate. So it's a much more costly way of doing things. Is there too much emphasis on kind of information, education, like people, like awareness, where, you know, we could have if we have a better system that we don't have to worry about educating people. People just naturally use it in a safe way. Is that not possible?
Your question is too philosophical.
It's a basic principle of human-computer interaction, isn't it?
Actually, this is to answer your questions. We need to find the right person to add actually, so who will be the person that will put up parties to establish such a systems? Mm-hmm. This kind of the workforces, are they somewhere, or we still need to educate them to become the driving forces of the systems? Yeah. That's a chicken and egg.
It's a chicken and egg. Yeah, it is.
If technology will help, you can design some AI assistant or AI bodyguard or agent to guard against the
virus. Digital me that kind of monitors everything I do and then says, hey, that might be a bit suspicious. Yeah.
So that is employing the protection at the endpoint at the client.
Yeah,
If you say we don't have an endpoint, then you have to do it in the system.
Yeah.
Then this comes to be what do we want the surveillance stage?
Do we want a it's
quite right.
do we really want to? Do we want to open that? Can of worms. So I don't know.
Yeah, but another new forces may be able to answer your questions. Mm-hmm. Those who established the idea system you mentioned may not be human beings, can be AI. So AI will be the game changer, will be the changer of all the landscape in the future. They bring some threats, but also opportunities. Mm-hmm. You may expect and vote. It is governed by the AI.
Now you're really scaring me, because I know there's opportunities with this threat, but I kind of... My estimation is that threats outweigh the opportunities. So I'm very, very cautious when it comes to the kind of overhype and excitement in AI. I think there needs to be careful development. I think that it's just gone awry a bit. Okay. This is a good discussion. I really enjoyed talking about this. It's a very challenging problem.
Mm-hmm.
I think, we need voices from the tech side, such as yourself, Yi-Chen, and also from the policy side, such as yourself, Chu Hong, and, even education and all that, to find a good ensemble, like a combination of different ways to tackle this very important problem. I don't remember the exact numbers, but the amount lost due to scams is really quite staggering. The number of cases reported, and there could be a lot of unreported cases as well, the number of cases reported was like, whoa. That's a lot, right? So it is a tremendous problem. People are losing their livelihoods, their entire savings and whatnot. It's really an important problem that needs to be solved. So I'm glad that we're having this conversation. We haven't kind of provided a foolproof answer, but I think we're one inch closer to better thinking about what the fundamental problems are and how we might want to tackle this problem and try to integrate different perspectives. So I want to thank you for your time this morning.
Mm.
We'll monitor the market and see, how SRF or other, the banks implementing, cleaning up their applications and whatnot. And then if your predictions are not correct, if it gets worse, then we'll have you back for another round of discussions.
Okay. Sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thank you for your time. Thanks. And we'll see you again some other time. Thanks.